What's better than this?
Nothing.
Guys being dudes here on the Draft Dudes podcast presented by Locked On. It's Joe Marino and Kyle Krabs from the Draft Network, and we are your hosts here on this Wednesday episode of the show. Draft Dudes is brought to you by Built Bar. Remember, promo code Locked On gets you $10 off your first order at BuiltBar.com. I had the black cherry for breakfast this morning. Kyle, good morning, sir.
I had banana dark chocolate for breakfast this morning.
Big fan of that one?
Yes, I'm a big fan of that one. And as soon as we're done here, I'm probably going to go down and get another one, to be completely honest with you.
Is it the banana nut bread or the banana cream?
Banana cream.
I haven't had that one yet.
Yeah, it's banging.
2020 head coach hot seat extravaganza.
There you go. We're off and running.
You'd never know, but we wrote that on the sheet so that I could get that correctly.
I don't have a problem with it.
I don't either. It's just that...
Well, you do, because we had to write it down.
Well, because on Monday when I tried to get that out, it didn't go well.
You know? Said, why don't you go ahead and introduce it, Kyle?
You go ahead and say whatever the hell we're calling this.
Yeah, so we did 8 head coaches on Monday's show. They were Cliff Kingsbury, Dan Quinn, John Harbaugh, Sean McDermott, Matt Rhule, Matt Nagy, Zach Taylor, and Kevin Stefanski. Of that group of 8, Joe, we had 5 ice-cold seats. Kingsbury, Harbaugh, McDermott, Rhule, and Stefanski. We had 0 lukewarm seats. We had 3 toasty seats, Dan Quinn, Matt Nagy, and Zach Taylor, and we had 0 sizzling hot seats.
There will be more variety today.
We will have more. This is like when we did the fifth-year options for 2018 last week.
Yes.
Everything was chalk to start. We're like, well, maybe we should like try and box a guy in to kind of make it interesting. No, there's going to be none of that painting of corners on today's show. There are some hot seats to be had.
Not the first guy. The first guy is a first-year coach with his new team, Mike McCarthy, with the Dallas Cowboys. Comes over from a really successful run with the Green Bay Packers, where, what did they win the division? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 out of the last 7 years before he was fired. A lot of playoff success, Super Bowl championship. What's been interesting, obviously we don't have any resume for him in Dallas. I like that Jerry Jones kind of pitched this as a situation where this is a high-profile organization in terms of its history and expectations. I do think that's a good idea for Dallas as they moved on from Jason Garrett to get a guy, you know, with a resume like McCarthy and for a high-profile team, if you will, like Dallas. But what's been interesting, Kyle, has been to see Cowboys fans go from no, we don't want him, to he has a press conference, he talks about analytics, he says some cool stuff, and all of a sudden everyone's in on Mike McCarthy. It's funny how that happens.
Yeah, and what's really fun is if you look through, this is a completely insignificant statistic.
Oh, okay? Good.
I'm gonna lead with that right off the bat. But if you look at Dallas's track record of changing from one coach to another in year one under a new coach, Wade Phillips to Jason Garrett, they formally made that switch mid-2010. He was kept on, team improved by 2 games. When they went from Bill Parcells to Wade Phillips, the team improved by 4 games. When they went from Dave Campo to Bill Parcells, the team improved by 5 games. You know, we kind of lose our luster here because we went from Chan Gailey to Dave Campo, but that was 1999 and 2000, right? Like, forgivable.
That was the weirdest stretch of Cowboys football when, like, Quincy Carter was playing quarterback.
Oh, yeah. It was like they had no idea what to do as soon as Troy Aikman was out the building.
A lot of
Remember Drew Henson?
Yeah, yeah.
Really, yeah. They tried really hard to make Drew Henson a thing.
But that's not unlike what we went through with Miami, with Buffalo, for Kelly Murray. This happens pretty normal, right? But Dallas had their moment there too, man. Like, coming off of a legend. Not everyone's the Packers and the Colts, okay? That's not a normal thing here. Favre to Rodgers and Manning to Luck.
This team hired Dave Campo, and the team did not score 300 points in a single of his 3 seasons.
That's a big number for you. Lately, you've been bringing that up.
300? Yeah. They went 5 straight years without 300 points scored in a season. the first two under Bill Parcells too. Now, granted, they went 10-6 because their defense only gave you up 260 points in 2003.
Didn't Chan get this team to the playoffs at like 8-8 or 9-7?
Both years Chan Gailey was the head coach, Dallas Cowboys made the playoffs.
What was their record though? Do you have that?
10-6 and 8-8.
Yeah.
But you've got Chan Gailey's first year here. We had Troy Aikman, Emmitt Smith, and Michael Irvin still on the team.
Was it really? Was it that long ago? Make
the roster. It was 1998.
Wow.
So I know that's kind of, I wanted to bring something interesting to the table with this team because, like, McCarthy's a very accomplished head coach in year one going to a very talented team. I don't foresee any pathway to Mike McCarthy not being the head coach of the Dallas Cowboys in 2021. Do you?
No, that's he's.
But typically, this is something that has gone well for Dallas over the course of the past few years, or the past two decades, I should say. When they change head coaches, this team improves. Oh, plus 5 wins, plus 4 wins, plus 2 wins. Okay, you go, you take the average, let's say you go plus 3 wins, you're 11-5 this year.
I mean,
because it's never really been a talent issue for Dallas.
Right.
Because of the way that their team operates, they're always spending. A new head coach is going to give this team a kick in the ass, which is what they need. Ice cold.
Denver Broncos' Vic Fangio is up next. And, man, let me tell you, I like what's happening in Denver. This defense, everyone wants to talk about Drew Lock and these new weapons, but, like, how about Vic Fangio and Ed Donatell in year two with this defensive talent? I mean, you added Jarrell Casey to this mix. Nobody thought Shelby Harris would be back. He came back for a very modest deal. Mm-hmm. Alexander Johnson's a putting star at linebacker. Brad Chubb's back from the ACL tear. That'll make him and Von Miller a very potent pass rushing duo. You know, this safety tandem of Kareem Jackson and Justin Simmons, that's probably top 5 in the NFL. And then you got some corners here to work with in A.J. Bouye, who you brought in. They're still counting on Bryce Callahan to come back, right? He wasn't able to be part of the mix last year, coming back from that foot injury with the Bears, but now he's back in the slot. That's an important role for this defense. CB2 is up in the air, but they've got some players for that spot, man. This defense is going to be freaking good, and then you got a lot of potency with this offense and all the young playmakers.
Right. That's the biggest thing for me is, you did a great job outlining the defense, but offensively, this team's got speed. I literally think, Courtland Sutton ran 4.51, I think.
I think he ran the 4.4s.
If Courtland...
Now we got to stop everything we're doing.
I wrote about this. I wrote about three teams who established their identity in the 2020 NFL draft, and I wrote about the Broncos. Their team identity offensively is speed kills. Okay? So listen to the speed. Wide receiver, tight end, running back. Courtland Sutton, 4.54. KJ Hamler projected 4.28. Jerry Jeudy, 4.45. Noah Fant, 4.50. Okwuegbunam, 4.49. Melvin Gordon, 4.52. Philip Lindsay, 4.39. This team's got jetpacks on their back, man. And it's super exciting to think about all the team speed, a big-armed quarterback in Drew Lock, who has the arm talent and is learning how to be more of a quarterback and less of a thrower, right? Which was Vic Fangio's words regarding him last summer. I'm so excited. And then offensive line-wise, like, they went out and they signed Juwan James last offseason. He only played in 4 games. They drafted Dalton Risner last year. They drafted Lloyd Cushenberry this year. Garrett Bowles played well for the last 5 games of last year.
Sign Graham Glasgow.
This is going to be if I were going to start a Madden franchise, the Broncos would probably be a team that I would pick with some frequency because they're probably going to be a lot of fun to watch play.
So we have good defense. We have a very potent passing attack with a lot of speed, but you talk about this offensive line, a very physical group in year two under Mike Munchak. And nobody gets too excited about running back stables, but we got Philip Lindsay, we've got Melvin Gordon, we've got Royce Freeman. Think about Denver, Mile High Stadium, wearing teams out with wide zone. We got Pat Shurmur in the building now as offensive coordinator. These teams are going to be huffing and puffing, and they're going to get this trio of a dose, this three-headed monster in the fourth quarter when guys can't even freaking breathe on defense. And here comes Gordon, Lindsay, and Freeman to close out football games. And if you go to sleep on trying to stop the run, they got speed to kill you in the receiving core. Like, this formula looks frigging good for me, especially in that mile high altitude.
Now, let's shift the focus back to head coaches and coaching seats.
Yep.
Gary Kubiak was here 2 years and then left. Vance Joseph here 2 years and then left. Vic Fangio, 7-9. Yeah. What happens if this team goes, no, I don't foresee it, but hypothetically, what happens if this team goes 3-13?
Really?
If something goes way off the rails.
Well, defense doesn't meet expectations. Drew Lock isn't it, and it proves to be a lot to put together offensively in one offseason with a new offensive coordinator. That's your course to 3-13. Yeah, things get real dicey there, especially because you just outline a history with this organization where they don't always get to that third season, and that's actually not been the norm here lately.
I would call the seat lukewarm.
Just because it can't be ice cold, because we outlined a path right. That's somewhat believable that this could be a team that spirals and doesn't work out.
Right. I don't expect him to be gone. I think, you know, I really love what they're doing, but I don't foresee Vic Fangio when you consider the Broncos' tendencies of wanting and willing to get a definitive answer at head coach. I see enough dynamics there where if something goes horribly wrong this season, I could see a pathway to them moving a different direction.
All right. What do we got? Detroit Lions.
Patty cakes.
Matt Patricia. Too bad we didn't record our conversation that we had off the air about this the other day. They fired Jim Caldwell. Kyle, after having a winning record in three of four seasons. And, brought in Matt Patricia, who has went
and averaged nine wins a year.
Averaged 9 wins a year, which is unprecedented success in the history of the Detroit Lions. Since the Super Bowl era, Jim Caldwell had the highest winning percentage of any coach in Detroit Lions history.
And he was the only one above 500, right?
Only one above 500. Was not particularly close. They said, you know what we can do? We're not satisfied with going to the playoffs and winning. We want to go to the next level. And the guy to get us there is Matt Patricia, who has, is he 9-22-1? Is that his record? 9-22-1 in two seasons, yep. A defensive genius. They spent 2 years getting talent for his defense. Brother, this was the 31st ranked defense in the league last year. This is what you moved on from Jim Caldwell for?
I don't know. I can't make sense of it, right? And you look at this team since 2000. How many winning seasons this team has had since 2000? We were 9-7 in 2000. And then you got to go all the way up to 2011 with Jim Schwartz, and then the team promptly went down to 4-12 and 7-9, and then Caldwell comes in and they're 11-5. 7-9, 9-7, 9-7. And now we've regressed two straight years with Matt Patricia when all they've done is bring in square pegs to fit in square holes. And 30 other teams across the league are running defenses with round holes.
So did you just say that since 2000, the Detroit Lions have had 5 winning seasons, 3 of which came under the leadership of Jim Caldwell with 2 random years, 2000 and 2011 sprinkled in there?
Yes, that's correct.
Hello.
And we fired Jim Caldwell. Don't know why.
All right. Is there any, here's the thing. We talked about this NFC North. It feels pretty wide open in my view. You know, maybe the Packers are offended that we say that. They were 13-3 last year, and you think they probably got better, right? So, like, but at the same time, it feels wide open. So, like, it's right there, Matt EP, like, rally the troops, go have a good defense like you're supposed to. And Matt Stafford was playing at an elite level last year. You've got good weapons, and you stabilize your offense a bit with DeAndre Swift and in some of the offensive line additions. Like, there's your course, but how much do you have to prove, knowing that Jim Caldwell was not good enough after three winning seasons in 4 years? What does he have to show ownership here to make them not just believe that he can win next year, but that he's the answer long term?
Well, I have no idea. But I also don't know that ownership knows when to let guys go and fire coaches.
Fair enough.
Because Jim Schwartz went 2-14, 6-10, 10-6, 4-12, and then 7-9, and improved by 3 games. And that's when they fired Jim Schwartz.
So he has a lower, if Schwartz went 4-12, 7-9, fired.
Yep.
Patricia's 3-12-1, whatever he is in 2020, and then presumably fired. He's going to have to win 11 or 12 games. Based on the history, I guess. I don't know what the expectation is here. This seat is 100% sizzling hot.
Yes. And it's mainly because I have no idea how Detroit expects their expectations to be lived up to. And I have no idea how pressing they feel it is, because if you're going to make changes, like Matt Patricia came in 2018, was a totalitarian, had a losing record, the team was miserable, the media hated him, everything was bad, and then he comes in this year, and I understand Matt Stafford got hurt. But how many games in a row did we lose at the end of to end the season?
Well, he's 31st ranked defense, and you're supposed to be a defensive genius.
Right. So we lost 9 straight games to lose the season. We started the year 2-0-1. So we went 1-12 in our final 13 games. And the one game we won was a 5-point win over the New York Giants.
Sizzling hot, right, Kyle?
Sizzling hot. As hot as you could possibly get. No wonder this team can't play well if you watch this team, you know, operate, how this coaching staff coached players at the Senior Bowl.
Green Bay Packers, Matt LaFleur. Kyle, we're talking about Matt LaFleur, who is the active leader amongst all the NFL head coaches in winning percentage. 82%, the best. Matt LaFleur.
No, that includes his postseason play, correct?
Includes postseason play. So he's got a higher winning percentage than Bill Belichick by 14%, Kyle.
Stop it.
This is the gold standard. what a great year, right? He goes 13-3, wins a playoff game, right? I mean, stepping in for Mike McCarthy, reworked the offense a little bit. I think obviously they need some upgrades with their weaponry, but kind of an opportunistic team that had a lot of success in year one. And I mean, obviously he set a pretty high standard for himself, you know, by having that type of a record. But, you know, I think he proved a lot for a guy that didn't necessarily come in with a shining resume. You know, that's not like those Titans offenses were juggernauts that he came from. He came into a situation and led the team to a lot of success. And I think there should be a lot of optimism about him as a coach. And, you know, interesting to see where expectations are and if he can meet them in year two.
Right. Well, I think no matter where your expectations are, we should probably expect the Packers to regress a little bit this year, right? Just based off law of averages. Like,
sure.
It's a wide open division. You would have to have another hell of a year to go 13-3 or better again. You know, but this is a team I expect to win double-digit games this year. If I think about the roster that they have, the coaching staff did a really nice job. The personnel moves that they made were effective decisions to bring in difference makers. Defensively, they completely upgraded their pass rush, let Blake Martinez walk. But you know, if you look at Blake Martinez's production in coverage, it's probably a good thing to get a little bit more of anybody else on the field. So I expect double-digit wins, but I'm not going to be surprised if Green Bay comes in at the end of the year and they're 10-6 if they get some bad bounces, 11-5, but that should not be a negative indication of Matt LaFleur in year two. And I think his job is as safe can get.
Ice cold?
Ice cold.
You know what's not ice cold? Built bars. These are the best tasting protein bars I have ever had. I mean, they taste so good. And what I love about it is there's so much flavor variety. I talked about having black cherry for breakfast this morning. Kyle had banana chocolate cream. I had, not going to lie, I had the peanut butter brownie for dessert last night for dinner because, I mean, let's be honest, it tastes like I'm eating a candy bar, but it's only 110 to 150 calories depending on the bar. These things have wonderful flavor variety. They taste great. They have the feel of eating a candy bar, and the nutrition facts are off the charts. And it's an amazing combination of low calorie, high protein, low sugar. There's no crazy additives. They're only 3 points on Weight Watchers, Kyle. These things are absolutely amazing for you. If you compare them to the most popular protein bars in the market, it's 7 times fewer carbs, half the calories, 7 times fewer sugar grams, and more protein. It doesn't even make sense how it can be that good for you and taste that good. You got to find out what the fuss is all about. Go to builtbar.com. Use our promo code LOCKEDON. You can get $10 off your first order at builtbar.com. And then let Kyle and I know what your favorite flavor is, because the big boards, the Built Bar big boards are coming in hot and heavy. And I've really enjoyed seeing what other people are finding out is their favorite flavor. I still think raspberry chocolate is at the top of my board, but peanut butter brownie is pretty close. So, you know, let us know what you think. Head on over to builtbar.com. $10 off your first order with promo code LOCKEDON. All right, Kyle, it's time to talk about your favorite person in the NFL. Bob. Bill O'Brien with the Houston Texans. He has won the AFC South 4 times. He's been to the playoffs 4 times. A lot of success. Questionable general manager tactics. Defense let him down quite a bit last year. They got Anthony Weaver now instead of Romeo Crennel as the defensive coordinator. So it's difficult because from a resume perspective, just like wins and losses, I mean, the guys he's been there since 2014, had a winning record every year except for 2017, and has won the division 4 out of 6 seasons. That's very good, right? But questionable with the amount of control he's been given over this organization.
Right. And that's where this accelerates for me, is Rick Smith was pushed out the door by Houston, and O'Brien effectively takes control, and they said, well, we're going to do a collaborative effort. And then it became, well, Bill O'Brien's going to be our general manager. And Joe, this is fascinating to me. You mentioned the success that they've had as a team in recent years, right?
Mm-hmm.
This team has won 3 of the last 4 AFC South division titles. But in 2 of those 3 division champion seasons, the team had a negative point differential.
Have some lowlights, man.
9-7, negative 49 points, 4-12 when Watson got hurt, negative 98 points, 11-5 plus 86. They were 10-6 last year with a negative 7 point differential. So,
yeah.
This, I mean, you consider, and it's not like this team, yeah, they got whitewashed by Baltimore week 11. They lost 41-7. That's the massive difference maker. But Joe, we've talked about Deshaun Watson a little bit on the show and his ability to create magic and pull rabbits out of his hat. That's a dangerous way to live, isn't it?
Yeah.
Half of Deshaun Watson's wins as a starter over the last 2 years have required fourth quarter comebacks / game winning drives in tied football games. Half of their wins, Watson has had to engineer magic in the fourth quarter to secure wins. that is bounce of the ball here, tipped pass here, a centimeter here. All of a sudden, you could feasibly be, you know, 7-9. And I know they sat their starters for week 17 against Tennessee. They'd already locked in the division championship, right? They were set in stone, so they didn't have to play that game. But, like, you beat the Raiders by 3. You managed to beat the Chiefs in the regular season by 7. You beat the Jaguars by 1 point. You beat the Chargers by 7. You beat the Buccaneers by 3, and I'm pretty sure that was the game Jameis threw 5 freaking picks.
It was.
5 turnovers in that game.
You've presented a hell of a case for this team wins in spite of Bill O'Brien, and there's a realistic reason to believe why this team could achieve greater heights with different leadership. You've outlined that very well, Kyle. I don't know that the Houston Texans agree with you because, I mean,
I don't think they do.
No,
they should.
You look at it, he's won the AFC South in 4 of the last 5 seasons, a winning record in 5 of 6 seasons with the organization. And this past January, after everything this team went through last year and the criticism that it faced for the deals that it made and all those things, they appointed him general manager less than 5 months ago.
Well, but here's the thing. What else were they going to do? Because he'd already mortgaged the future for the here and now.
Hire the general manager. I don't know. What
general manager is going to come into this situation, Joe?
There's only 32 of these jobs in the world. You're taking it.
You don't have any assets.
You
he traded 3 third-round picks for 3 different running backs in a span of a year.
You cannot convince me that somebody wouldn't take the job as general manager.
You know what that is? That's Dennis Hickey in 2015 with the Dolphins. And it didn't matter what job that man did, he was out the following year because once the bottom dropped out, it was time to make a change. No, if you only get one shot to be a general manager, are you really going to roll your dice and bet your career and your reputation on Bill O'Brien mortgaging the future for the here and now for a team that could barely scrap to score more points than the opposing team?
Well, I think you outlined a pretty compelling case about what exists on this roster and what's been able to happen here and how.
But how do you restock it going forward? You're going to have to pay Deshaun Watson.
It becomes very challenging, but I will not be convinced that they couldn't have hired a general manager.
I will tell you this. If I was, and we all know I'm not, you don't need to remind me. If I was a well-respected NFL executive, and teams were interested in me for a general manager position, I would have hung up the phone on the Houston Texans.
You get Deshaun Watson, though, Kyle. You get the quarterback that you've identified as the one you would have second to Patrick Mahomes. You walk into that situation.
But my 2 to 3 years of undoing the mess that Bill O'Brien has made as far as the assets this team has, their salary cap situation projecting it forward. This team will move backward before it moves forward again, in my opinion. Maybe not this year, but when the bottom drops out, it's going to drop out hard. And if I sign up to be a general manager and I'm overseeing it for 2 to 3 years and that bottom drops out on my watch, guess who's going to take the fall for it? Regardless of whether or not it was my fault, me.
But don't you think that's where organizational alignment comes in and having like a clear vision and a plan?
But Joe,
to it?
We know these teams don't do this.
I saw it happen. I've watched it happen with the Bills.
Okay, and that's you're a rarity, and that's why for the first time in two decades, your team is finally climbing out of mediocrity, right?
But that's I go into that interview and I say, hey, this is what I need. This is what we need to understand. We need to be on the same page on these things. I got a lot of work to do. I need time to do it. This is my specific plan. Watch me execute it. I take the job in a heartbeat, and I think most people
would. How'd that work for Sashi Brown?
I'm just saying I don't think.
About a process, and this is going to be a multi-year process, and I need your patience. But when we get to the other side, it's going to work. They said, okay, Sasha, you go ahead, be the public pinata and pull us all the assets so that we can have the firepower to get the hell out of this mess. And then when it comes time to actually make those picks, your ass is out because we went 1-31. And that's not, I don't foresee that with Deshaun Watson and the Houston Texans being like what the bottom dropping out looks like, right?
We've seen him carry this team with a bad offensive line and a shit defense.
Right. So I would just be petrified to take that job. I guess, can we call this toasty? Because it's not sizzling hot. Because I agree with you, the Texans organization, you know, unless it gets really ugly this year, they seem married to him for the short term because he knows he's in the here and now and he's got to win now.
Yeah. I think it's probably fair. I won't fight you on that.
Toasty?
Yeah.
What would you make the case for? Lukewarm or sizzling hot?
Well, I think trying to be more predictive here, I think he's probably on the lukewarm side of toasty. But if, you know, it's a little bit like I can outline a course here for things being mediocre, 7-9, 8-8. And, you know, that could lead to some speculation. So it's not like cut and dry that even though right. they've ascended his course and his path with the team and he's the freaking general manager and head coach. Like I see that the evidence there, but it's not like I couldn't see this changing, if that makes
right.
sense.
Right, going south.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So toasty.
Frank Reich, Indianapolis Colts, 10-6, year one with this team. At 7-9, obviously navigating through the Andrew Luck retirement and obviously the big turnaround from 17-18 with bringing in Quentin Nelson and Chris Ballard kind of really being in full swing and the roster talent starting to shift. And, you know, really, I think the perception after 2018 was somewhat like Brian Flores in Miami, where it's like, wow, this team really got a lot out of players that really didn't at other points in their career. We believe in the development and teaching ability of the staff and the leadership of a Frank Reich type player. And I think 7-9 is not necessarily something that you get super excited about in year two, but the dynamics of that season we have to keep in mind. And so I think this is an important year for Frank Reich, but I don't think it's something that his job weighs in the balance of, because I think he earned enough trust based on 2018 and the leadership that he portrayed in 2019.
I agree for sure. And, you know, we talk about the loss of Andrew Luck, but T.Y. Hilton played 10 games this year. So, you know, your quarterback retires on the eve of the season, like in the preseason, and your star wide receiver misses almost half the year. Defensively, this is a good team, Joe. I mean, the rails kind of fell off a little bit towards the end of the year. Tampa Bay scored, rung 38 on them, 38-35. The end of the season, the Jacksonville Jaguars game got a little ugly. But generally speaking, this is good talent on this roster. This is good depth, you know, as far as what Chris Ballard has been able to build. They just got snake bit by Andrew Luck having to make a decision that was best for him. And listen, they were a Brian Hoyer game away. Brian Hoyer not playing and Jacoby Brissett being healthy away from being 9-7. Because they lost by 2 to the Pittsburgh Steelers, and Brian Hoyer threw a pick 6 to Minkah Fitzpatrick inside the red zone in that game. And then the Miami Dolphins, who were 1-7 at the time, came to Indianapolis and beat the Colts 16-12. So for all of the bad and all of the struggle, this team was still very close to being an above 500, a winning record team last year.
Where are we putting this? Ice cold?
Either ice cold or lukewarm.
On the lukewarm side of ice cold?
Yeah. I guess my only hypothetical, right, is what happens if this team comes out this year and lays an egg. And you go 10-6, 7-9, and then lay an egg in 3 years. If you have 3 years of regression, that would be troublesome. But do I foresee it happening? No. But like, what happens if that's the case?
That's what I tried to sell the good fortunes of 2018 and some of the good things about last year as like belief that maybe the results weren't where we wanted them to be, but we believe in Frank Reich as a leader for right. this football
and
team.
And they definitely do. And they should.
Yeah.
But if I'm thinking about ice cold, right? Like the guys that we have listed as ice cold, they're guys with more firm footing. Matt LaFleur, Mike McCarthy in year one, Kevin Stefanski in year one, Matt Rhule in year one, Sean McDermott as an ascending team for the last 3 years, John Harbaugh and Cliff Kingsbury in year two. Like, I think the dynamic's a little different, and that's what would make me consider lukewarm. Right. But if you want to make it ice cold, I'm not going to fight you.
This has been, he's not getting fired, right?
He's not getting fired either way. No.
So he's ice cold. He's not getting fired.
But what about Vic Fangio? Because yeah. we listed Vic Fangio as on the ice cold side of lukewarm.
That was the selling point. There was like the last three coaches were two and done.
All right. Frank Wright is ice cold. You're right.
Let's talk about my favorite coach in the NFL, Doug Marrone, head coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars, 11-22 over the last two seasons with the Jaguars. And Kyle, this man's been a head coach in the NFL for five full years, right? He had the interim year in 16, and three of those 5 years is the permanent head coach of a football team. His team's finished last in the division. Uninspiring leadership style, funky with the media, preaches accountability, but then his players aren't accountable. It feels like a get by year for Jacksonville. And I look at this division with the Colts, Texans, Titans, and them. I feel like I think that they're the favorites to be last in this division this year. They have some good talent, good young talent on this team. I think it can turn around. I don't think Doug Marrone's going to be the guy that's going to turn it around.
Yeah, they have a lot of talent on this team, but it's all young talent, right? And you've got an unproven question at quarterback that you're continuing to see kind of the fractured relationship between some of the players and management. With Tom Coughlin obviously is gone, but those fractured and strained relationships still remain. And the shopping of Leonard Fournette. And didn't Fournette like have some interaction with Cam Newton or something and on social media and was like, yeah, come to Jacksonville or something like that?
I must have missed that. I know Leonard Fournette likes to sleep through meetings and things like that though, but
Fournette Newton. My producer's gonna pull it up. Yeah. Leonard, this is from April 17th, so like a week before the draft. Leonard Fournette wants the Jaguars to sign Cam Newton.
Okay.
So he went on first take and talked about why he wanted Newton on the team.
Hell of an endorsement for Gardner Minshew.
Right. So it's like stuff like that's just like, as far as an alignment of like the star players, all the players, management, ownership, like I just don't think that they're aligned, fully aligned. And a lot of that has to do with the damage that was done by Tom Coughlin, right? And they did well to get him out of here, but this team has no sustained success under Doug Marrone. 10-6, 5-11, 6-10. They've regressed in defense three consecutive years. And obviously a lot of that has to do with trading away talents like Jalen Ramsey. And we still need to figure out if they're going to trade Yannick Ngakoue and Leonard Fournette offensively. So it's like there's this big identity shift that's being undertaken by the same people that created that identity. And that to me is weird.
They want to get through this year.
I guess.
That's what it feels like. Get through it. We'll reset after this year. See if we can strike lightning in a bottle with Gardner Minshew and some young talent. Think Marrone's coaching this team next year?
I would say no, but like the owner, Saad Khan, like he's kind of a wild card as far as like he has done halfsies on firing people like every time he's fired somebody since he bought the team.
But Doug Marrone's going to be the guy he clings to.
If you were ever going to just hit the reset button, was this not the offseason to do it?
Maybe they didn't feel like they were in the right range for a quarterback.
The Dolphins weren't in the right range to get a quarterback in 2018/2019 when they changed to Brian Flores.
Yeah. So, yeah, they should have already done it. They should have already done it. Yeah, I'm with you. They should have already done it. That's why I find it. Well, that's kind of a case for them sticking with him. Come on, though. That's crazy.
It is crazy. This seat should be piping hot. I'm going to mark it as piping hot. You want to make it piping hot. This is a sizzling, piping, hot seat.
It's a very colorful chart today.
Yeah, lots of variety.
Dude, this next one's as easy as can be. Kansas City Chiefs.
Slam dunk.
Andy Reid. The guy's been there since 2013. That's 7 seasons. Won the division 6 times. Winning record.
Just won the Super Bowl.
And every year won
the best best quarterback in the league right now. Needless to say, Andy's going to be fine.
Well, I mean, just the longevity for this man's career is this guy's been a head coach in the NFL since 95. He's had 3 losing seasons.
Right. I mean, this is low key. If he would have been hired earlier in his career to be an NFL head coach, this would be a potential contender for Don Shula.
Wow.
He's 62. Record. He's 62. So like, he might have another 10 years.
Right. You don't know. Right? Could it be 10 years? Right? Could it be 2, 3, 5, you know?
But now, and that's the big wild card too. It's like, well, he finally won the big one. Andy never had the big one. He went to 4 straight NFC championship games with the Eagles. They never won the Super Bowl. They finally had the big breakthrough to go to the Super Bowl, and they lost to the Patriots. Well, now he's finally got his championship. And it's like, I don't know. Is that fulfillment going to make it easier or harder for him to continue to coach into his late 60s, early 70s? I don't know. He'll be here for a foreseeable future, but like, he's got 322 career wins. He's got 222 career wins.
I think he loves it, man.
I think he does too, but like, how much longer are you going to love it to the degree that you need to love it to do that? Because he could feasibly have been, if he was hired to Philadelphia, 7, 8 years younger. Yeah, as you said, he only has 3 career losing seasons since 95. That's it. That's insane. That's Don Shula level. Don Shula had, I think, 2 losing seasons in 33 years as an NFL head coach.
The only question is, how long is he going to coach?
Right.
Hall of Famer. He's cemented his Hall of Fame status. Yes.
And he is the coldest of the seats we have done thus far.
I think the important thing we have to end on with Andy Reid is his quote after winning the AFC Championship against the Tennessee Titans last year. And he said, what he did to celebrate, I had a cheeseburger and went to bed.
Amen to that.
My man, Andy Reid.
We stand a king. Well, I don't know about you, Joe, but I don't think Built Bar has cheeseburger flavored bars yet.
Chocolate and cheeseburger. And Andy Reid special, I'm sure.
I am not going to be having a cheeseburger and going to bed, but I will be having a Built Bar and resuming my day. So we're done here with Draft Dudes. Hope you guys enjoyed. This is episode 2 of a 4-part series exploring the hot seats of the NFL head coaches. As a quick recap, today we went Mike McCarthy, ice cold, Vic Fangio, lukewarm, Detroit Lions, Matt Patricia, sizzling hot, Matt LaFleur, ice cold, Bill O'Brien, toasty, Frank Reich, ice cold, Doug Marrone, sizzling hot, Andy Reid, the icest of ice colds. We hope to see you guys tomorrow. Thanks as always for listening. Come on back and see us again.